Thank you all for attending that early in the morning at this session here. My name is Stefan Hauks. I'm running product management at NetBiscuits, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about the lessons we've learned while we were endeavoring to create a JavaScript framework, which at the end of the day never turned out to become a JavaScript framework, but I will not tell you yet already what it's going to be. A little bit background on NetBiscuits itself, so who are we, where are we coming from, and then diving straight into the problems we faced while developing a JavaScript framework for Android, iPhone, and other devices as well. So really taking you through the two-year journey we took to get to this stage here, and I'm very proud that at this event, pretty much a couple minutes away, we're going to launch our product and the result that we have created in this kind of 2 years. And this is what this presentation is also about, kind of showing you the results we created after a long thinking process, after talking with many, many of our clients, and some of them are actually here in the room who helped shaping that future. It goes about different kind of problems we encountered while creating this framework, and it's not just about code. It's pretty much more about situation of the industry. It is about kind of more generic problems we're having, and it is also going beyond just thinking of a single device. It is going about having tablets, smartphones, small and large tablets, and all these things in the room. And just some recent quote when I created the presentation is, if you look at 100 devices, then you still have 100 different versions of HTML5. It wasn't me that's saying it. It was a CTO of Facebook saying it, and they decided to create basically three HTML5-based websites. So they're leaving out 97 of these sort of versions. And we're covering not only the three they did, but also the 97 others. Let me give you a very quick background on NetBiscuits itself. So NetBiscuits was founded in 2000 with basically the first internet-capable phones on the market, and the mission always has been to kind of power the mobile web with Nokia 7110 WML-enabled phone all the way to today's iPad 3. That has always been the vision. With that, we gathered many, many customers, a lot of valuable brands in there, and based on our platform, these customers are experiencing around 10 billion clicks a month. And it's about as many unique users that visit sites built with NetBiscuits than there are on Twitter right now. So more than 15,000 people have kind of helped creating that. So there's developers out there who are using our technology, using our markup language in order to create stunning mobile websites. And that we can create stunning websites, you can see that one of our customers, CBS, recently won the Mephis Award for their site, for their work that has been done there. But also our technology itself was kind of a couple of times awarded. And just running here, you can read those awards that we received just in 2011. At the end of the day, we are a global company, so we're headquartered based in Germany. We're having four out of these eight offices are in the United States. So US is a very important market, but also Singapore, Australia. So pretty much we're covering every continent with our software so far. What is NetBiscuits? What are we actually doing? What's behind the whole thing? First of all, it's a mobile cloud platform. So besides the biscuit amount we're just talking about, it is an execution platform as well. So we're having embraced the term of cloud computing or software as a service even before there was this hype in the industry. So at that point in time, we just called it a hosted service, and we have made very good experience ever since. So looking at that part, BiscuitML is a special markup language, and I'm not talking too much about it. It's created, I think, 5 years ago, and one of the key things about it is it was kind of context-sensitive. So one of the things we figured very early when talking about mobile internet was you need to go up the value chain. You need to go understand more about the content itself in order to be able to render it across different devices. And if you think about that one, if you think about HTML5 at that point, pretty much, I'm sure everybody thinks about an article tag that is in HTML5. So the semantic layer that HTML5 is bringing to the web, which will help greatly at the very end, is something that we have done ourselves with BiscuitML years ago in order to create this. What the platform then does, very briefly, is it takes this BiscuitML and then renders it accordingly to the different phones. Most of the times, it spits out HTML, JavaScript, and cascading style sheets, but it's also running on phones in Japan for AI mode. It's running on older phones with WML in there, as you can see with a very old Nokia one. So we're spanning pretty much the mobile device ecosystem for a web-based solution. And the key here is that you'd really have one piece of code. It runs everywhere, and if new phones come up, like they do every day in Asia, you can be sure it runs as well. So you do not have a ton of maintenance coming up just because new vendors have new phones. With 2010, so that's basically the marketing session, is done here. 2010, we experienced a lot of success with mobile web, so we had a big uptake then. But on the other hand, we also had a very big uptake on a kind of new class of devices. Besides then, everybody was happy to have a mobile phone that can go on the internet. And the biggest problem probably was bandwidth, the limited imagery you could present, and of course the cost. Around the globe, at that point in time, the costs of mobile data access dropped massively, use increased, and we saw the kind of uptake of smartphones. iPhone was introduced, Android not much longer behind that. With that happening, a couple of things have shifted. First of all, HTML became just the standard. JavaScript was introduced to the client as it was with a normal web, and the demand from people rose dramatically. So people were asking for, oh, can we use the scripts inside of these phones? And of course, no good website today runs without JavaScript. No mobile website runs without JavaScript today. But our platform wasn't able to do this in a sensible manner. You could find some workarounds, but it wasn't really able to do so. So we really embarked on a way, how can we take the idea of device-independent markup and bring this one into the scripted world? How could we actually make programming device independent? And this is what kicked the whole project off. And one thing, we did the same thing as we did back then when we created BiscuitML, is we not only looked at the technical side, we looked at the use cases. So we started pretty soon discovering that there will be something which we call the search design dimension. So it's not only about width and height, it's about the interactivity that you can create with mobile phones. And I think Apple has done a fabulous job here to kind of increasing the imagination what can be done at that point in time. For us, it was very clear that this interaction of different content, of sites, of users with a device and with the internet in general is something that need to be baked in into that next generation of the mobile web. 2011, we thought we were there. So we released a couple of rich internet or rich UI components, dealing with the forums, dealing with things like POI location, so point of interest location. We thought, okay, this is something that really helps our customer, and actually it did. But again, the good thing was they used it. The also very good thing was they kind of demanded for more pieces to come to our platform. One key thing is obviously going for more flexibility. You cannot really anticipate any potential use of a script when you design it. You need to have more flexibility in there. And if you have more flexibility in the scripts, you need also more flexibility into the layouts. On the other hand, they wanted more features out of the box so they can actually bring bigger puzzles together with less lines of code. So we decided to continue the journey. We weren't there yet, so we couldn't really say it's done. So we had to dive in a bit more what was going on at that point in time in the mobile ecosystem. So jQuery was very successful, and rightly so. And we looked at the technology. In theory, everything could be done by HTML and DOM, and if you just manipulate the two of them using a bit style sheet, you can do basically everything. And so that was the question, why should you use a framework? Why should you create something on top of that? What we figured by then is a couple of basic lessons that we had learned before. First of all, HTML5. It is a great driver of the mobile web in particular. However, as soon as you look at it in more detail, if you create your own site, it becomes pretty patchy. Because some of the stuff is supported on one phone, the other of the stuff is supported on the other phone, and the biggest sinner, by all means, here are the biggest drivers. So all the Android devices baking into their browsers some special features or implementing it in a special way, and this kind of made HTML a great idea, HTML5 a great idea, but it's just not there yet. So we figured it needed some help. It needs a way that you can use that one without permanent if-then-else statements about if this is capable, then use that piece of code, else use the fallback division on these things. So you needed more standardization. Also, looking at all the JavaScript frameworks at that point in time, how they deal with these DOM manipulations, they all do it, but we learned a long session ourselves, and we tried to leverage these JavaScript frameworks ourselves, that the manipulation is very tedious. And very tedious at the end of the day, means it's error prone. It's very costly for clients to develop things. And it was so hindering the development that we thought, okay, it's not enough just to manipulate these things. Otherwise, you're not getting the traction and you're not harvesting on the great capabilities coming from the mobile web. So, and with the iPad around and with mobile device categories, it wasn't about just a single size of screen anymore. All of a sudden, it was about multiple different screen sizes, which just made the problem more complex at that point in time. Going through the kind of problems we identified, going a bit in depth about them. So the first problem is the age-old problem that NetBiscuits all the time was solving. So the differences between the different browsers. And if you look at this kind of stat, which comes out of our database, these are the top 10 devices back in mid last year on our platform. And if you just look about the support of the different HTML5 features, it's very simple. Everything that is not green is actually a problem. It's not only not green is not a problem, but if the capability is not implemented in almost all devices, you're starting not only with the ifs and else how it's being done, you're also starting about thinking that in your design, you need to make it a decision, okay, if I'm going to use this functionality, what is actually the fallback position to that one? So this is probably a ton more green today, but we're still far away from having 50% of all the functionality that is envisioned with HTML5 coming along. And one thing, the poster child, and you can take in the audio tag as well, that is probably never going to be really resolved is the video tag. Just taking, what is the problem? So you can use it at most of the phones today. They will display it either in full or overlay, but you shouldn't have a problem with any of these smartphones really presenting video. However, based on the hardware, based on the chips they baked into their devices, all these video tags are requiring different codecs as a source. And there's certainly no way for a phone to transcode it. It would eat up so much battery. It would take so many kind of CPU cycles to do so. So it would be very insane to do. So you still, even so the tech is the same, you would need to go for native iTunes. You would need to go for MPEG. You would need to go for whatever kind of codecs are there today. And I'm pretty sure there's many companies around that are working on even more mobile-optimized codecs as we speak today to make the video experience even better than it is today. So what does it mean for a web developer who wants to create massive reach? You need to cater for all of those. So you need to have the if-then-else statements in your code, and you have to have the different videos encoded all the time on your server and making sure they're all up to date. And this is something, again, where HTML5 brings a ton of good things to the forefront, but it's just not there yet as the standard. So at the end of the day, a statement I found from one of the information things, you cannot detect HTML5 support. It's just not possible. You can detect whether certain functionality is supported, and this will be the case for a long time being. So if you think about a canvas, geolocation, it's not only about whether the browser can do it, it's also whether the device can do it, and whether the combination of device, OS, and browser then actually is able to deliver that sort of information. The second problem was introduced basically with the iPad. We have a different screen factor. We're having a new way to interact with the screen. Certainly at the beginning, all the iPad apps were just blown up, iPhone apps. And with the websites, by all means, it wasn't really much different. People thought, yes, just take your normal website. It's the same width and height you have there. So just use that as an iPad site for the time being. And not only most of the people would agree that it's not the best user experience at the end of the day, even if you go to companies like Google who are doing some measurement on conversion rates, if you do not have a mobile and tablet optimized sites, your advertising efforts are certainly humbled by that and are certainly negatively impacted. At the end of the day, and this is not really a picture about what the different OSs can do, so don't quote me that Windows is the best here, but just something that is coming. Is when the whole thing started with Apple, we had a smartphone and we had a dedicated size. We had the iPad with a dedicated size, and with ITV, we have a dedicated screen size as well. And from that point of view, you could argue three different sizes, three different sites to be built. This is a reasonable effort if you really want to drive your business with the mobile website. With Android coming along, you've got different sizes in smartphones. You have certainly different sizes in tablet screens. Again, with Google TV, you have also a TV set already there. And just coming back from Barcelona, where Windows kind of introduced a new concept with Windows 8, trying to bridge even the gap between the PC and the mobile phone and the tablets and the IPTV. And I'm pretty sure that Android and Google and the community will catch up very soon. But at the end of the day, if I'm coming back next year, probably the list is twice as long. And certainly then nobody will really ask for a way to create 20, 15 different versions of their sites. Nobody would pay for it. They would be slow in maintenance, and they would lose a lot of steam that could actually be used for creativity and functionality. So looking a bit at the problem for designing for multiple screens, it's not just about how you do the layout at the end of the day. If you really have something like a tablet and you have a smartphone, you probably need to break out your application. You probably have a couple of sites on the tablet marking just a shopping experience or marking an email experience around that one, and you have to have a different look and feel for the smartphone. And if you go through all the sizes in between, you have to make gradual choices what to display, when, and how. And this is something that designers really need to spend time on to make it the best possible user experience. Today, everybody says, yeah, it's right, but can we keep it to the bare minimum of different screens? Just because all the media queries, all the coding that needs to go on in the background is just costing so much, and tweaking one functionality here often leads into inconsistency there. And it has nothing to do with the frameworks, technically. It has just something to do that the layout needs to be different, so the code needs to be different regardless of what kind of technology you're using here right now. So let's have a look at frameworks. What are they doing? What can they do? And where should they need to go? I think, first of all, there's a ton of good existing frameworks out there. I'm pretty sure most of you have used one or the other of that one. So you have the things like JavaScript mobile web frameworks like jQuery, something like Sencha, PhoneGap. There you have the people still thinking, okay, cross-device compilers like Accelerator are good ideas. At the end of the day, they're all doing their jobs very well as long as it's one device class. They are stuck more to the front end at the very end. looking frameworks, the way we are looking to it, is first of all, there's the classic triumvirate of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And that's great, and it should be stay there, and it should be leveraged wherever possible. But if you think about developing modern mobile web applications, it's not only about the browser experience. There's really good things which we have learned from the smartphone that you interact with the physical world. You take a picture, you upload it somewhere. You're recording your voice, you're making a geolocation search, all these sort of things. But what would it be good if you have a framework that not only captures the front end of the device, but also allows you very easily to integrate things like Google Goggles, your own picture recognition, to integrate calling service, recording services, so that your phone can reach out into the rich services that are available on the web that then can be used to the benefit. And if you just think about coding pieces for the front end, you still would need to have a PHP, Java, Java Server Pages, and all these things in order to make this one work and spitting out then frameworks again. So the vision, I think, that we need to have for frameworks is much more all-encompassing, not only taking HTML in the front end. We need to integrate the back end. We need to figure out a way that I can write a piece of code, camera tag, just put in something below there, oh, send this one to Google Goggles, get me back the result from there, and then I'm making a decision what to present. And this needs to be just one piece of code so that a designer, a front-end developer, a creative person, can envision this functionality right away. I think this is what will drive massively the mobile web and the capabilities that come along with this always online sort of capability. And in order to make this happen, one key part that I'm confident this is going to happen is because of the standard of HTML5. It sets the vision, it sets the expectation, it drives people toward. And my prediction is as soon as HTML5 is finally a formally agreed standard, it will take 3 months for all the browser developers to come up with a camera tag, to come up with audio recording, and all of these things will be possible at that point in time. The third problem, and I don't know how many people of you know this kind of famous Tesco example about mobile shopping in the Sewell subway, but it is about multi-device users and shopping. A lot of people, in particular in the developed world, they do have an Android phone, and they do have, as I do, an iPad. They do have a PC. So at the end of the day, what they're doing is they just use the most convenient device for the particular moment. And just one of our large German publishing customers, they tell us very loud and clearly, and we have a spike using the phones in the morning and during lunch break, and we have a massive spike with a massive different user behavior when it comes to the evening lessons. Or evening lessons, hours, of course. So the evening hours. And what they do know, or they do anticipate, is that it's often the same user. So the one who looks up what happened on Super Tuesday on the smartphone in the morning is probably the same person that then looks up some life recommendations, holiday events, and other things in the evening. And that this is kind of true, we know from another customer of ours in the e-commerce world where you have logins. They see that people are using these devices, are the same people. They log in multiple times, they do different things there, and what they want to achieve is a way that you can seamlessly walk through these sort of sessions. And just think about the newspaper example. You're coming up, you're browsing in the phone, you're browsing in the tube to work to Manhattan, and then you get out. Certainly you stop browsing because getting out is better than missing in the station where you need to get out. But how good would it be when you go back in the evening, you open up your tablet, you're going to the same site, it would just ask you, hey, you want to continue browsing where you stopped this morning, or you want to start somewhere else? This is something what people think about a multi-user experience, and I believe with more connected devices, with more devices being online, being used for different purposes, the expectation of the users will just grow rapidly, and we need to find a way to make this happen. And technically, yes, of course you can do it. You can detect a session, and you can ask for a login, so you can create this overhead stuff, but again, you would spend a lot of time in development and in maintenance, maintaining this rather basic rudimentary function and not to trying to push out some new and innovative design and use. If you then just look at the problems 1 and 2, they create problem number 3, not only mathematically, but also you have a big mix of screens. You have tons of different content types. We talked about the audio and the video. You have different code if you integrate the backend. So you have JavaScript, cascading style sheets, HTML5, everything next to each other. And you're certainly ending up with different features and functions at that point in time, either by design, which would be good, or you do it by accident because just the change management was too complicated to keep it across different devices. And with that said, you will have different sets of business logic, because if you take today's frameworks, a lot of what your business logic applications are doing is presenting the screen. Just go back to the shopping example, where you probably have on one business flow the shopping list, you're having the detailed pages, and you have the shopping basket. For tablet, it's pretty much one design. You want to have it interactive so people can just tap on the list. They get the detailed page. They can move it over into the shopping basket. For a smartphone, it's probably not that simple, because at least my fingers would be too thick to really have a sensible user experience here. So you probably have a little bit of different functionality. And just think for a moment about the PHP code you're creating out of a shopping system. You would code this logic of the display into your backend, and all of a sudden, your shopping cart logic will break once you start it. And when the initial project still works well, maintenance a year later, when half of the people have left, and you need to implement one new functionality across these different ecosystems, it will become very, very complex. So, and another thing, it's probably less of a problem than a promise. When we looked at the user interfaces, when we really started looking into how can we solve all the problems we just stated there, we made some interesting observation about what the tablet is actually there, because it's more than just a screen factor. So the first thing, whereas a year ago, I probably would have stood here and said, yeah, the tablet is just the best of both worlds, from the web and from the smartphone. From the web, we get the great real estate, and we can have frame-based layouts. And from the smartphones, you get all the cool stuff by just swiping things around. And technically, this is true. But at the end of the day, this is not all the tablet really does when we use it to its full potential. The tablet, actually, is, as it stands today, it is the melting pot for something very, very new. And just the two things I talked about is just a subset of what the tablet can do about the different screen sizes. Probably skipping here quickly. But what really is it all about is something which we kind of, yeah, I go back to Star Trek on that one. It is some sort of parallelity you have in your user design. If you think about your website not only in displaying things, but also in a sequence of steps where you change and interact with a company, with your intellect on a newspaper site, this is what you do. You look at something, you take the mouse, you click, you look at the results. It's a sequence of events. If you do the same thing on a smartphone, you look at something, you put your hand over the smartphone, you click on something, you take the hand away, and it is then there. It's a sequential looking, command sequence. With a tablet, this is the reason why Chekhov is here, it is a little bit different. Because I can just have my fingers on the side. I can use a spin and a spread, and simultaneously, in that moment, I can have the user interface change. I can really see what's going to do. I can heat up the dial, and the reason it brought me up there is that's what Chekhov did when he just started things, and just the colors changed on the command display. And another thing that this is all about, it's about connected devices as well. And this is when this tablet parallel example will come back actually in the real world. How about just thinking that this little part of the screen is not physically one screen, but it's your IPTV and it's your smartphone. And these are connected devices where you can simultaneously change things. So you can look at your videos, you can look at your pictures on the screen, and you control it not with a clumsy remote control, you control it with any sort of smartphone. This is another way where parallel execution will come into play, just by thinking of a single user. And you can make it even more complex when it goes to multiple users, just connecting families, interacting companies in collaboration. All these sort of things are pieces that are not a problem. They are a promise that come with the mobile web. And that is something we certainly should look into how to solve those. We haven't solved everything of that, but we solved quite a lot. And we gave it a name because one of the key things we wanted to achieve is we wanted to achieve a tactile world. It's not just about technically displaying layouts in the best possible way. It is creating a user experience that goes emotional. So what we called it was NetBiscuits Tactile. And I'll walk you through what this in core is. We tried to solve these problems, and the biggest problem we needed to solve is we needed to bring development costs down, we needed to bring the skill level down so that people can start experimenting with these things. So Tactile is, as much as it can, a single markup language. So a lot of these JavaScript cascading style sheets, the different device types, all should be baked into a single markup so you have a very easy way to look at your code, to design it, to manipulate it, and what we will do as well as we bring this all the way back to the Google Goggles example. In order for this to happen, we had to overcome one technical challenge. Because tapping all the pinch and spreads and the drags and the drops is something every phone is different. And there's no bigger sinner than the Android phones in detecting these things. Without a big set of effects and events available out of the fingertips and with a promise that every new device, we will make the effort to support it instantaneously, I don't think it would take off because you would just miss this interactivity that's so crucial for the mobile web. So we had to support a ton of effects, and I'll just show you in a sec what these are. And as much as we can help you kind of make the technical layer transparent, there is still some need for device-specific information. So with NetBiscuits, having a big room full of devices, more than 15 people worldwide testing devices, we opened up our kind of knowledge about devices. We packed it into a device information service that is at your disposal so you can, if needed, really make some particular choices. And just think about a simple thing. You want to have something downloaded from an iTunes store or a marketplace or whatever Microsoft and Nokia are coming up with. So that device information service will allow you to do these sort of things. And at the very beginning, the server, the request hits the edge of the entire network. You can detect whether you want to send it to a NetBiscuits-powered site or to something else because you probably have a website. At your backend application, you can use the very same pieces of information. It's an Android. It is very strong on JavaScript. It's not so strong on video. These sort of things you can use to make your decisions very simply. And all the way up to the client device, so you have this information on the client as well, so you can actually detect how big of a screen resolution as it is. Is it portrait or landscape, or whatever you want to make a decision based on the device characteristics at that point in time. And finally, we have a big task to do, so we wanted to make it as simple for ourselves as for you as well, so we created something which we now call an HTML5 framework. So instead of the biscuit ML I showed you very, very at the beginning, we will allow everybody to use HTML and HTML5. And we're even going that way that if the browser does not have an HTML5 capability available, and just think about the geolocation, and you're using such a tag, we can substitute this functionality, as long as it's available and we have it in stock, with some other functionality. And GPS is just a prime example. There's a ton of browsers out there, old Android devices that are able to capture the position and to send it to a server. We have, as initially stated, a biscuit for it. So we can actually extend the reach of HTML5 capabilities beyond non-HTML5 servers. It's a big task from a technical point, but I believe it's a very big service also for HTML5 because you can start using it because more devices are actually capable of handling these things without you, again, going into large if-then-else kind of cascades. Technically, we want to stick with web standards. We're dedicated to maintain web standards. So everything that goes out to the device There's nothing proprietary from NetBiscuit. It is all web standards, and it is the best manner the browser is going to support it, starting, first of all, with HTML, wherever possible, HTML5. We are using CSS technology extensively, and we are providing a preprocessor to that one so that something that works on an Android or 2 or 3 can actually be substituted, and we have a JavaScript library as well. And all of these things, as web standards are always calling for openness, is something we fully disclose. You can build things on top of that, so you can extend our JavaScript effects with the ones you think should be there. And if you do it at the right layer of the stack, pretty much on top, your library will be device independent and you will just benefit from the testing we do every day because it will be built on our foundation. And finally, we just talked about the device information service, which is obviously not really extendable for your side, but it's for your disposal. We're just one slide away, I believe, from the code, how it actually looks like. What we want to do with Tactile, obviously, everything you can do in HTML5 is something we can do as well. We cannot go beyond. We do not change the browser. We do not change the JavaScript engine. We do not modify the phone anywhere. But what we do, we make it much more efficient. Your ramp-up time, your development time, your flexibility when it comes to cost of change, all these things we bring down with our framework all the way to, as being a SaaS service, everything operates there. You do not need to worry about the details you have there. One of the big benefits we brought into is an age-old kind of paradigm from software engineering. Every line of code you can spare is a ton of lines, less problems. So what we do is we really reduced the markup language. We brought it up to a higher level. And just one of our examples, from 70 lines of Tactile code, it goes all the way to 300 lines of HTML, CSS code, if you would just develop it for a single device. If you go across Android and iPhone, you probably have 400, 500 different lines of code you need to look at. And this is our Hello World example. It is already baked in responsive design, which you probably have heard of. It's already mixing things from our proprietary old BiscuitML language with some new HTML5 features, and it's already bringing in some kind of effects at the very same point. And I'm pretty sure everybody who's familiar with HTML sees what these things do, or you assume that an ID does what ID does in HTML, and you're certainly correct. One of the we went with the great length is wherever we can, we choose the very same way nomenclature as HTML. And the reason being is we want you to not only develop things fast, we want you to not having a large, big learning curve to take. A couple of things we just extend. If you just look at the height, for example, where you have portrait 20% and landscape 30%, this is certainly not what HTML is doing, but I'm very sure that everybody here in the room can immediately see what this is going to do, so there's no big learning for the principles to be done. Of course, you can do the very powerful stuff there, but there's some learning needed, but at the end of the day, everybody probably understands how this looks like. And if you just look at the view, for example, which is just a container at the end of the day, and you look at this on pinch, you're pretty sure familiar with on click, and then you can see what this does. Okay, if I'm pinching, it should fade away. So we haven't dared to bring it back up that, so we haven't really implemented fully, but you can see the principle, I hope, very easily about what this new kind of markup extension is all about. Talking about the effects and events, all of those are handled by on tap, on drag, on press and drag, these sort of things. They're built in, and what we are doing and what our team is really spending a ton of time on is to testing them across the different devices. Because one of the hardest things we encountered with Android was that even so it's the same technical ability and even so the same JavaScript code does work on different Androids, it has very often a very poor performance. And so we needed to change things in order to make the detection more performant at the end of the day. And we needed to go through some waiting times in order to have multiple effects on a similar page being supported. So you do not have only one, and then the whole phone breaks down, you have multiple of those, so you can really create an interactive site out of the box. Technically, Tactile today is able to run with three-finger events. You don't see any of those on the screen here, because with our test sites, we already see that this is something everybody knows about, but the user out there, they still need to learn the G-stuff. They still need to understand that if I'm making a pinch, it's probably bringing something away. If I make a press long on a button, they need to learn it as well. We put in three fingers just for the sake of being sure for the next year, so we can come back with new G-stuffs and we do not have to do the framework in general. The same thing goes for different layouts. If you saw the layout and the view concept, you can see how the green is pretty much the same all over the place. And if you look at the orange one, it's pretty much the same across different devices. And where you would need to change things is probably with the blue one, which is horizontal and vertical, and you would use different buttons, you would use different words in order to make this happen. What Tactile and NetBiscuits will help you with is you're just setting a condition equals smartphone, and then you can run the blue code and design the blue code in the way you want to. You say equals large or small tablet, and you can just put the different tablet sizes out there and create this piece of code. And again, what you then have, you're designing for 3, 4, 5 different device categories, you're having one piece of code, and you can keep it to a minimum. And it's much simpler compared to the media queries you would need to do in a CSS commands you would need to do, and you have it in different places. So we want to make this simple from a design point of view. In order to be really useful, there need to be some detail in there as well. So one of the key concepts besides the layout that came up there are actually views. Views are technically, and the ones who dare then kind of changing to the source code view, we'll see we translate that one into diff at the end of the day. They're containers that help manipulate the content. And we provide a rich set of functionality to make this a very easy way to look at your content. If you just look at the scroll view or the multi-view, this is just some way for the multi-view, for example, to have a swipe in there to change it and have the pictures being displayed always at the edge of the device, so you don't need to take special actions in order to make this look the way. Or the scroll view, where you can just move your content around pretty heavily. This is just how it looks. You have a scroll vertically. You tell them some scroll bar colors. You're setting some of the attributes. Rather simple. Looking at the multi-view, the same thing. So you talk about things like if you're going to the bottom of the code, you can have effect duration. So how long should this help? And so is it a fast transition because you're fast-moving, high-beat music site, or your valuable Cadillac sort of site where you want to have a slow transition? This is how you set it. You just dial with 3,000 seconds there. You talk about the effect types that are in there, and this is a very simple change. And you do it whenever you want in your Dreamweaver kind of environment. Just one of our customers who have worked with us using these sort of things. This is a very high-end tablet size. It's primarily designed for tablets in shop usage of Toyota from Australia. And they have basically built it totally on their own. It was 10 hours away. They couldn't do anything else than reading the documentation of the beta code, and they developed it directly themselves. And they just choose to have, of course, the cars in the background, the positioning, the views right in the center of the screen, so they're going for a bit of a different layout. Talking about other things like flexible views, if you just think about columns or multiple things in there, you do the very same thing. And what you see in there, each of these views has an item, and the item is where your content goes. And you do not have to kind of worry whether you want to have portrait or landscape. You just code it in there, and this gives you these sort of views. One example here about used is coming from the Daily Show. They're just using it for the different videos. So you can see you have different videos, and obviously there are different numbers of videos on the upper and the lower item, and you can swipe them independently, so you can actually move to where you want. The same goes for the newsroom itself. So you have just different views there using this kind of markup language as well. And of course, you have the video. Daily Show is all about TV, so you have video capabilities in here as well. Last but not least, one of the big things that is around tablets is pictures, animations, squares in all shapes. We have created something like a grid view, which is a very neat technical thing, but at the end of the day, it's very, very powerful. In particular, if you think about a shopping site or something where you list a lot of content, typically on your backend application, you go with two nested kind of loops, one going through the columns and one going through the rows, and just depending on the screen size, you make a calculation if it's two, three, or four rows. With this set of view, this whole thing is taken away from you because you just decide how big the grid view is on a certain device, and then you just put in the items in one go. And you decide whether the scroll is horizontal, whether the grid flow is vertical in landscape and horizontal in portrait. This is all you do, and the rest has been taken care of, so you can really make quick changes to design, can design this very quickly. And if your back-end system is bringing up your content, they just need to do anything between the first item and the last item. That's all they need to care about, and you have the full control about the UI. You can then actually go there and say, if it's a third item, I want to have this one undraggable, or I want to have this one being expandable, whatever you need in terms of effects for transition. Technically, there are some overlays in there as well, so we're providing all the user experience that that you have in the native application, because at the end of the day, it's not only about a good-looking website. It needs to go to the gold standard of tablets and smartphones, and this is still, until today, probably the native app. But we're coming there very, very closely so that people will see mobile web as equally valuable as the kind of native apps. Coming back to the very end of the problems we need to solve, just thinking about the different ways to bring shopping applications to life, to have the list of products, to have the detailed pages, and have the shopping basket in there. I told you that one of the problems is that you have multiple sites, multiple HTTP requests with a smartphone, whether it's a tablet. The way we solve it is by nesting just the standard technologies you've seen here, a layout, a view, the items of that one. So you would design a virtual kind of linkage and set of these sort of views where these things interact. You would set the logic in there, and then you wrap it in some conditional code, where to display what and how to transition from the product list to the detailed page, and these things you bring in. The big, big advantage you have here is one back-end code creating this set of pieces, one front-end code, which you do design in Dreamweaver. And if you stay with us for a couple of things longer, everybody with some background in coding can see how we can actually achieve lazy loading and these sort of things, because we start with the overlay and the multi-view over there, and the last thing somebody's going to see is the orange piece. So we can actually then enhance the framework further to bring up some more speed. You don't have to load everything at once. It will be lazy loaded, reloaded with all these sort of things. And that's something, just the way we design it, just the way this kind of markup is designed, it will allow you and us to do these sort of things out of the box. And this is something, I assume, having twice as many device categories next year, that this will be very, very valuable for everybody designing user experiences. Because, again, the users will not just separate themselves from smartphone users and tablet users. I'm a smartphone user in the morning, and I'm a tablet user in the evening. I'm an Android user in the morning, I'm an iPhone user, iPad user in the evening. And just one way where this concept was actually created directly was for BMW in Germany. So they're launching one of their new motorcycles in a couple of weeks from now, and they just wanted to have a very clear user experience. The whole thing is not so much that you sit on a couch. The whole thing here is about, on the 23rd of March, if you happen to be in Germany and if you happen to be a bike-loving person, you should see one of the BMW dealers where you see this machine. It's their biggest machine live. And you just stand in front of that, clicking a QR code, and then going down there at the bottom, you just click on this and you hear the sound of the machine. You're swiping top-down. What you're seeing is how this looks in different landscapes. And you're seeing the machine in red, and you don't like red. You just swipe horizontally, and then you see the different machines being presented to you. And Of course, you want to know how much it costs you, and you want to know how much power it has, so you just take a pinch and bring all the things in, so you see the technical data. So there's a little German lesson in there as well. So you see the technical data being displayed. You're seeing some videos in there. So really make it a very emotional experience while you're standing in the showroom and you can't touch the machine itself. One of the good things about that one, knowing that the assets have all been there, it took less than a week to build it, test it, and we just discovered yesterday evening it even looks good on a smartphone. It was only designed for a tablet, but you know what? On a lot of smartphones, it actually looks pretty good because of the way it's designed. It looks impressive on a tablet. It looks very good on a smartphone as well because it's not full of text. It's not so information heavy. And all of a sudden, it's not technology that really makes this a great use case. It's the design. It's the amount of time people at the agency from BMW spend on designing that sort of case. Coming back to the initial quote, I think it's still true we need 100 different devices and 100 different ways of versions of code, and this will stay the same. And even if Android 4 and 5 and 6 become more homogeneous, it will take years until 2 and 3 will go away. And we will still have iPhone, iOS 4 applications around for a while, and we still will see massive differences more than ever in the power of the devices. If you just think all the disappointment around the Kindle Fire, not being the iPad killer, but being priced at 50% of the price, this is going to happen more and more. And we see already questions about, oh, can we get a $99 smartphone there? And guess what? It will not be the most powerful device. But again, you will have a lot of people using it as their first internet device, and you certainly should have the best possible experience also on those devices as well as on the high-end devices. So this 100 versions will be 200 next year, and so it will take another 5 years until this is going down a little bit. And until that, that's room for us to improve, to move on with Tactile, to make sure that you do not have to have 100 versions of your code. You only have the three you choose of the different the homepage and 5-6 different versions. The rest of them, probably in a tablet and a smartphone version, plus ultimately a PC version. This is pretty much on time, the end of my presentation. If you want to kind of look at this, if you want to see the BMW example live on your smartphone, just take the QR code that brings you to our website, and there is under Tactile the BMW showcase, or there's some colleagues around in the room who have the QR code on their back. As well, so do I. If this is not enough, if you want to have more talk, if you have ideas what we else could do, please join us tonight at Shakespeare's. Everybody in the room who got up that early, who was interested in the talk, is more than welcome to join us at our launch party that we're having tonight, 5 to 8 in Shakespeare's, and the address is there. So thank you so much for that. Hopefully it was interesting, and if there are any questions in here, we still have 10 minutes, and I'm more than happy to answer all questions I can answer. Great question. The question is about, do you see the death of native apps? Yes and no. There will be applications that are still sensible to be native apps. If I have something to write a text on it, doing a drawing, it makes a ton of sense to have native apps. For high-end performance gaming, yes, native app makes sense. But for anything connected, I see actually the web applications being more powerful than the native apps. Just by thinking how you link back to the cloud, by the way you can design it, they will be actually more powerful. And then, yes, they will wait, as Java applets have waited years ago when Flash and JavaScript took over. I can see this starting to happen this year. So frameworks like these take over. The interest in mobile web, and probably 2013, it's not a good idea anymore to do native apps for the normal website-like stuff. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Does your framework basically utilize responsive design to make these things similar?
First of all, we allow for responsive design. So the way you just turn our tablets, this portrait landscape we talked about, this is responsive design, and it happens on the client. No reload at that point in time. On the other hand, we overcome some of the weaknesses of responsive design. There's just no point sending Android code to an iOS device and back and forth. This is where we do some optimization to that one. Technically, yes, we want to have responsive design. The thing we got when looking at responsive design sites, they're using this media queries and CSS, but they pretty much stop all at the homepage because it's very, very complicated. This is the reason why we introduced portrait and landscape, and if you look at the source code that comes to the device, there they are again. You find media queries, you find the very same CSS. So they're using those, but we're just abstracting this layer to make it easier so more people are going to use it. So we're using exactly the same license that we used all over the place. So one thing for everybody to start in the room, we have a developer edition, and you can actually participate already just in the beta. Just go to our website, sign up, you can use it. And it's a full production version, so there's no difference to that one. We have licenses for smaller companies, for larger companies. Please just see somebody in the room, so we have a license here. The man is pointing out there. I think one of the great promises from HTML5 is that you can actually use offline capabilities. And one of the great obstacles I can see that need to be overcome, in particular with iPad 3 and the massive graphics, is the download time. And so what we are doing with the next version, and the team in Germany and Singapore is working on that, is we provide you not only kind of about lazy loading strategies, we provide you with caching strategies as well, so you can actually use the offline capability. Yes, I do see that this framework can do offline capabilities. I do see, if you see the business flows, this is basically one page for that can be achieved as well. It's on the roadmap basically for mid of this year. I think we are talking about mobile web apps, and then we're talking to brands who want to present something, then we talk about mobile sites. I think at the end of the day, the next generation experience will, even for brands, be technically a web application. I think we're still lacking a sort of a new name to take to the search dimension there. So we talk about a web app because technically we need to do it that way, but I don't really make a distinction. I think it's a blurring line that goes down there. And from a technical point of view, we can be a web application as we can just a standard site, both as possible. Yeah. Our framework is written in a couple of different things. So some of the backend technology all runs through our cloud. So we're using Java technology most of the time to execute on the backend server. We're using standard JavaScript areas for writing our snippets. I can't tell you really what kind of frameworks they're using there, what kind of technologies they're using there. We're using some C technology for the security pieces as well. So we're really trying to pick the best part of the jobs. We also leveraging things like cloud, so the servers are scaling automatically. So we really try to leverage the best in kind of cloud computing that is out there. If there aren't more questions, take a couple of more minutes to write down the address. I hope to see you all at the party. And thank you so much for listening.